Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Halloween, everyone. Happy Monday. Thank you for tuning in to Help for HD and the HD View. This is your host, Melissa Bilardi. Our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, and my producer, James, will cue you into the show. Please tell all your friends and family about the HD View and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. More than 9,100 listeners now. Thank you for your support and interest in Help for HD programming. I'd like to say hello to everyone in the chat room and also my awesome panel. James, Sue, Keith, and John are on tonight, and so happy Halloween, everyone. And we'll break for a little bit of music here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about some very interesting subjects. So here we go with a little bit of music. About a really fabulous book that I found. Actually, one of my son's friend's father gave me this book one time, and it's called Into the Light. It's by John Lerma, MD, and it's real-life stories about angelic visits, visions of the afterlife, and other pre-death experiences. There's quite a number of chapters in here. There happens to be one chapter relating to Huntington's disease, and I thought it was appropriate to bring to your attention. This particular author, John Lerma, MD, he is the inpatient medical director for the internationally renowned TMC Hospice, which is part of the largest medical center in the world, the Medical Center of Houston. He has spent the last 10 years caring for the terminally ill and is widely recognized for his compassionate care and for his teaching of end-of-life care to nurses, medical students, and resident physicians. Dr. Lerma is also a frequent guest on local, national, international radio and TV, which I couldn't get him but on our show, but maybe sometime in the near future. He's also the author of Learning from the Light, which is the follow-up to this book, Into the Light. And what he says is, he says, what do people see before they die? And despite our advancements in science and medicine, death remains one of civilization's most glorious mysteries. Doctors have written books on near-death experiences, but research and data for pre-death experience is scarce. Because of this lack of information, Dr. John Lerma has devoted his career to compiling anecdotal and scientific research on pre-death hallucinations from the countless terminally ill patients he lovingly cares for as a doctor and director at the Medical Center of Houston. And in this book is this groundbreaking book. Dr. Lerma shares his valuable research and guidance in 16 inspirational stories of children and adults confronting their deaths through the comforting visions of divine beings. By presenting the mysterious visions, synchronicities, and angelic conversations terminally ill patients encounter, Dr. Lerma shows how knowledge of death can ease the pain and fear as we prepare to enter into the light. And that's what this book is about. And I think John Monkmeyer is with us tonight, and he can tell us a little bit about the chapter that he read regarding Huntington's.
It's one of the last chapters in the book, and it's pretty interesting. I didn't get a chance to read the whole book, but someday I will. And I think if you end up reading it, you'll find that it gives you a really good feeling that there is more to life than meets the eye. So for me, I thought it was very interesting because we go through so much with Huntington's disease, and there's so much suffering to see that there is meaning in life, and it goes beyond our understanding. So it's a very interesting chapter, and it's about a girl who's been, I guess, at the last stages of Huntington's for 6 months and can't speak. And when she finally does, she reveals a lot of the supernatural phenomena that she's been experiencing.
Isn't one of the issues in this particular story surrounding their faith, and I think she and her husband Benjamin are both Jewish, and because of the supernatural things that happen, her husband is actually converted to a messianic Jewish person through her experience with seeing Jesus and expressing what Jesus is saying for her to say to the people in the room, and it's really interesting how everyone's lives are touched by her experience, by her saying what she's seeing and what she's being told to say through her vision of Jesus. It's just amazing. We do have a guest in our chat room right now who says he saw an angel at 4 and later experienced many death close calls that only supernaturally could be saved from. James, did you talk to this person, or was it just in the chat room?
It was just put up in the chat.
That's interesting.
It's actually not uncommon. Quite a few people actually can speak to that, about seeing angel-like figures or angels at an early age. So that definitely is something. I mean, I've heard about that happening too. And of course, close calls, or even speaking about someone who's in the process of having an operation and they quote unquote leave their body, and they see themselves looking down and they're kind of going towards the light, and of course coming back at not being their time. So that definitely is something that many people experience.
There is actually another instance in this book, Into the Light, that actually talks about that, and it's in the preface. In the beginning of this book, where Dr. Lerma talks about his experiences, and one of his patients apparently is dying, and and actually dies, and they bring him back. But what he sees, and he describes what he sees as he's passing, he's floating above everyone. So he's looking down at his own body and the people working over him, and he's floating, and he actually sees a quarter that is on the top of one of the cabinets in this room. And it's, I think, a 1958 quarter. So he actually sees the date on the quarter, and he sees the quarter. Well, then he's pulled back into his body. He's resuscitated or whatever happens. And he asks Dr. Lerma to investigate for him. Now, this is a man that's dying of a disease. I think cancer is the disease. So he's never been in construction. He's never been in that room before. So there's really no way that he could know that there's actually a quarter up on this shelf, right? So he asked Dr. Lerma to investigate. Dr. Lerma goes in with a step ladder and goes up on the shelf. Sure enough, here's a quarter, 1958. Now, how could that happen, right? That's incredible, I think. But that is just one or two of the stories in this book that is just a fascinating read. And they're all true stories. They're just all different in one way or another, but they all have one thing in common, and that is that they're end-of-life experiences, and it's very interesting. Anyway, I think we can break again for a little bit of music.
We actually have a caller actually waiting to speak with us.
Wonderful.
So,
okay.
Let me bring him on in.
Introduce him, James.
Hi, Davia. This is James. We are on live.
Hi, Davi.
Hello, Davia?
Yes, I'm
here. Oh, there we are. Davia. Hi, Davia.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Nice to hear you.
We're so happy to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much. And my brother is part of HD. His son has it. He's 38 years old, in mid stages. I'm living at home now, and named Michael Fenault, who's doing the Adventures of the Muffin.
Oh,
Brook.
Yes. Oh, we're so happy to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us. Yeah.
But I've had since I was born, I've had my first visitation with a real angel. It was almost about 9 feet tall. I was almost 5 years old, wide awake. And it was at the foot of my bed. I couldn't sleep. I could hear my brothers and older sisters and mom. I'm the youngest of 10 kids, talking in the next room. And I just was very restless, and I rolled over in a bed that was shared by four of the siblings, the bedroom was. And there it was, plain as day. It was,
wow.
The light was not coming from any other place but the being itself, and it wasn't male or female, and it did have wings. And it just silently stood there, and I was completely at peace. But the only time it got afraid is when it actually reached its hand toward me. And at this point in my life, at that age, I didn't know what that meant. We were going to Sunday school. I was raised in church. I completely knew about angels. We prayed all the time, but I didn't know why he was reaching for me. But interestingly enough, what I look back now, 30 years later, looking at that, I know that from the near-death experiences I've had multiple times in my life where I walk away without a scratch on my body and I shouldn't be alive today, that I think that that angel was preparing me, because a lot of people grow up in Christian families and they still have to see to believe. And that is a common thing, in having faith with God. Some people will grow up in Christian families and a lot of things will happen in their life that will turn them from God or turn them from faith. And I think the only reason I saw this angel was to give me the concrete evidence that I would need to refer to later on in life, that when these things would happen to me, I would know that, you know what, God is real and his divine angels are everywhere. Because I saw one when there was no need to have seen to need to see one. I wasn't in danger at that point. But later on, as instances came in my life where I was put in such tremendous miraculously saved from car accidents. I was telling James earlier, I was part of Campus Crusade for Christ, and coming back on New Year's Day at 5 o'clock in the morning after a two-day weekend of all Eastern State Colleges in Philadelphia, our car with three other people in it, the two guys in the front and me and the girl in the back, we were reading the Bible in the back. Two guys were driving in the front, and it was Monte Carlo, and all of a sudden we were hit about 60 miles an hour on the New Jersey Turnpike, and we heard a thumping, and before we knew it, one of the wheels, the tires came off the car, and then in the next 10 seconds, all four tires were off the car, and we were we were metal, cement, going, doing, we did three 360s on the middle highway, and there was, and we were all screaming at the top of our lungs. I almost want to cry when I think about
it. I know. Oh, are you okay?
Yeah. There's no reason, just from a physics point of view, that a car could stop like that. The momentum at 60 miles an hour is tremendous. And the car would not stop spinning. We were in 360s going all the way down the highway.
Wow.
And then I was in the back on the driver's side behind the driver. And all of a sudden, the car started skidding toward one of the highway over the poles, the big steel poles that have lights on them. And they go straight into the ground. And I know that I was going to be wrecked. I was going to be the point of impact. And the car was sliding through this highway, and we went directly toward the pole. And just it was like the hand of God came down and stopped the car before it could hit the pole. In fact, it hit the car came to rest on my car door, and it was touching. It didn't even leave a scratch on the car door. And I had to crawl out through the other side, and then an older couple in a pickup truck pulled up behind us, and they were crying, and they said, you know, we thought, oh, we're going to die, because we don't know how you stopped. And there were sparks everywhere. We thought the car was going to go up in flames, and they were looking for me. They said, where's the girl that we saw her going straight through to that pole? And I crawled out, and I was like in a daze. Well, my mom was back in New York in Queens, and she was woken up at 4:45 that morning, and God told her to start praying for me, that my life was possibly going to be in the balance.
Right then,
she prayed for like an hour, and then when I finally made it home 3 hours later, I ran up the stairs and I said, "Mom, I almost died." She said, "I know. The Lord woke me up at 4:45 this morning and said that your life was hanging in the balance this morning." And I told her what had happened, and it just, so many things like that have happened to me. I've had.
God is good.
One night I came home, God is good. I mean, my mom ran a restaurant in New York City, and I went down to the restaurant. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning to help her close up, and she wasn't ready to leave. So I took a taxi back to the house, and when the taxi left, my bag with my keys to an empty house was left in the back of the taxi, and I couldn't stop it. So at this time in New York City, there was maybe some will remember the headlines where the woman that worked at Merrill Lynch was gang beaten and raped by 10 guys in Central Park when they would beat her in the head almost to death, and she was in a coma for 2 years. She was a financial consultant at Merrill Lynch. And it was a big gang thing going on in New York and in neighborhoods where they called it wilding, where 10 or 15 kids would get together with baseball bats, and they would seek out people alone and beat them. And here I am standing outside my door that had two deadbolt locks on it. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I hear a group of guys say, "Let's get her." And they're about five car lengths away from me. And I'm between the storm door and the front door of this house. And I beat on it and beat on it. And just trying to get it open any way I could. And I knew that it was deadbolted and there was nobody home. And I said, "Jesus, help me." And they were literally three car lengths at this time, edging up closer, laughing, calling me names. And I just was shaking on the door. And I couldn't run to the back of the house at this point. I was trapped between the screen door and the front door. And then all of a sudden, the door popped open and it was deadlocked. The pin of the lock was still through the deadlock. I had to go in, unlock the door before I could close the door and relock it. I mean, that is, doors don't open by themselves. And the guy, all the guys were beating on my front door at that time. I ran upstairs. I called my mom. I told her what happened. And at that time, right when I was telling her that, we had a small earthquake in New York City. It was one of the very few that we've ever had. And I said, "Did you feel that?" And she said, "Yes, it was an earthquake." I said, "It felt like an earthquake." And she said, "Yes, it did. I felt it here too." So I know that God moves incredibly in people's lives, even when you don't have the faith at the time to know that He's working, that He's there.
Good message, Jim.
It's like,
wow.
His love,
so do we think
this
was your guardian angel that you saw? And maybe this was a message to you saying, okay, I'm here, you just have to pray and have faith, right?
I think the message is, interestingly enough, I thought I was called into, I pursued acting for many years in Christian film. And then 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, I became disabled myself with a spinal condition. And so I went into writing. And so what I think it is that I think what the whole message was is it doesn't matter where life is going to bring you. That once you love Jesus and you know that you're saved and you believe in Him and your whole purpose in life is to bring comfort and joy and support to your fellow human beings, and you do it in the name of God and you do it with everything that you have, that whether you see an angel and get a visitation or not, that God is always with you. Now, you talked earlier about having the doctor that wrote the book. My mother was in hospice and just died May 12th. And she was floating in and out of consciousness days before she went into the hospice to die. And my sister told me on the phone in New York City, my mom was, and she said, she's talking to people and we don't know who it is. And then she'll flow back into the conversation, and we'll say, "Ma, what are you talking about?" And I said, "Tony, did you ever stop to think that maybe she's talking to angels or God on the other side? Because if her body is at the point where she's dying, she might be having out-of-body experiences at this point, being so close
right.
to death, because I kept saying she could go at any time.
Maybe starting
to
phase into that dimension, maybe? To the next dimension.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was, because when she finally, the day that she died, May 12th at 4 o'clock, she had been asleep most of the day, and she woke up, and she saw everybody in the room, and then she looked past them, and she seemed to have a conversation, and they didn't know who she was talking to, and then they went out in the hallway, they went downstairs, they got a phone call to come back up that she had passed away. And I know my mother was saved. She 45 years kept us in church and everything, and I got a huge opportunity to talk to her. A week before that, she was in her lucid mind. She was fine. She died of congestive heart failure and pulmonary hypertension, and then they found another form of cancer in her. But she was 85 years old, had 10 kids. She was a very strong woman. She had short-term memory loss, but she was not full of Alzheimer's. She was very lucid, but she was a little hard of hearing, and basically her heart was getting out, and her blood pressure was down like 70 over 40. So she was slowly, slowly dying. But the one conversation I had with her, I said, "Mom, you know where you're going to go when you die?" And I said, "And that's an exciting thing, because, you know, to be absent in the body is to be present with the Lord, you know." And I said, "You're going to take your final breath here on earth, but then your very next breath is going to be in heaven in the presence of God." And I said, "There's nothing greater that we can hope for. You'll finally be able to put down this body full of pain." And she was so encouraged by that, even though she had spent her life encouraging her children. It was finally my time to be able to say to her, you know, and to remind her, because she got older and she started to lose all the verses of Bible she memorized, and I was able to, you know, gently remind her of the glory that's to be revealed later. You know, I think that another big message is we are really going to be surprised. The people we really bet on thinking, like I think someone said in a book review on Amazon, that they were surprised someone said they didn't see Hitler in heaven in the book, or Hitler in hell, or that, you know, something like that.
Right.
We don't know the girth, the breadth, the width, the depth of God's love. It's unattainable to us as humans, because we're in our fleshly bodies. We don't understand that.
And we're human.
We're human.
We are all human, right?
We're not omnipotent and omniscient, and you know, we don't have that capability. We're not eternal yet. You know, we have a starting point and an ending point, and then a new starting point. You know, passing on, you know, to life after death. And so because of that, as you very well know, we don't have God, and we're not supposed to be given God's ability to understand the great depths of this world of knowledge. There are things far that we will not know the answers to until we pass over. But books like this and doing what you're doing today is just is going to be such a blessing of all days.
Oh, thank you. We are so happy that you came on the show today and shared with us. This is so special. And, you know, we're all in this world together, and that you definitely had a wonderful message for us, so we appreciate you so much. And here we go with some fun music. Stay tuned.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Thank you.
He did the monster mash. It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. To my love Notari in the castle east. To the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abode to catch a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
He did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, oh, we're digging the sounds. He got on chains backed by his baying hound. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five. They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Drax's voice did ring. Seems he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It's now a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Drax a part of the band. And my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Boris sent you.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And do my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on with a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Mash
fool! Easy, Igor, you impetuous young boy.
Mash fool!
Okay, we're back, guys. That was an awesome story, Davia. Thank you so much for sharing with us. And now we have Sue Wright. She's going to share a story with us as well. And she's in the UK. Sue, are you with us?
I am indeed.
Oh, you have a story for us.
I do. It's many, many years ago when I was still at school. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the artist John Constable. He's a British landscape artist, and one of his most famous pictures is the Hay Wain. which is at Flatford Mill. And when I was at school, we did biology field trips to Flatford Mill and had the privilege of staying in the cottage there that features in this work of art. It's called Willilot's Cottage, and it's at least 400 years old.
Wow.
And it's the walls have moved so far from the floors, there are 4-inch gaps, etc. We were there in winter and had snowdrifts on the inside. We had to go to bed wearing coats, scarves, hats, gloves.
It's so cold.
We one evening I was sitting in front of the fire so close that my slippers started smoking. Luckily I moved before they actually caught fire. But that night, my friend is completely convinced she saw a ghost in the cottage. And she screamed and woke the whole field trip party. And the next night, of course, we were trying to lay traps to catch the ghost, but unfortunately I think her scream was so loud she frightened the ghost off, never to be seen again.
Oh my goodness.
So if ever anyone's looking at John Constable's picture of the hay wagon, they can remember the story of the ghost in Willilot's cottage.
Oh right, that's a great story. I've lost my chat room, so I don't know if everybody out there can still hear, but we are on the air. We have 28 minutes live left of the live portion of the show. I do want to break in for announcements and tell you about some upcoming shows. We have November 7, the HD View, we're going to be talking about getting disability. November 14, the JHD View, we have an open panel that day. November 21, Help for HD is going to have our very first year anniversary show. So we've been on a whole year. November 28, yay! Okay, and by the way, the goal is to have 10,000 listeners by then. So let's spread the word, guys. November 28, Help for HD with Katie Jackson. She is the author of Ferris Wheel, and her husband has HD, and she has a really wonderful love story. It's really a very sweet story. December 19, the HD View. We're going to have Christopher Ross. He's a PI for the Prequel clinical study. January 30, the HD View with Dr. Mary Edmondson. She's going to be on. So that's what's happening in November, December, and January. We still have some show times that are available. Please send in your ideas, and if you'd like to come on the HD View with us, we'd love to have you. James, did you have anything you wanted to announce?
Yes. Clarice from DeShalimar, a wonderful Clarice, she couldn't make it on the show tonight. She's not feeling well. But she was really happy to let us know today that they are receiving donations for the HD Relief Fund. They're coming in slowly and surely. However, thankful that she's very thankful for those who have donated. What they'll be doing is they'll be holding a lottery and be giving away a $100 gift card to a family that's in need in the community for Thanksgiving. And she also stated that at this time, we're asking for individuals who are really in dire need because, unfortunately, they only have a certain amount of money with the gift card that they can give out. So it's really exciting that people are actually giving to the HD Relief Fund and that DeShalimar can do something for an individual family for Thanksgiving.
Wonderful. That is great news. That's just incredible. Now, are we going to do this on Facebook? How are we going to do this?
I believe what she's going to do is going to have a way people can enter into the Thanksgiving lottery on her website within the next 24 to 48 hours. And basically people will enter their names, their addresses, and she will do a lottery to keep it fair, you know, because there are many people that are in need. So it's great to know that DeShalimar is actually doing that.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So thank you, Clarice, if you're listening.
Yes, thank you, Clarice and DeShalimar. We love you, and we so appreciate what you're doing for all of HD community. It's incredible. I think, did we have another announcement? Or James, did you have any other announcements?
That was it.
Okay.
I think that was it. As a matter of fact, I Sue just reminded me that the actual DeShalima offering is not just for the United States, it's international.
Oh.
So anyone that wants to enter, they can actually do that. And there will be more information that we put out in Facebook and also links to our website. So, yeah,
good
definitely. Thanks, Sue, for that reminder.
Great.
Hello.
Well, do we want to take a little break and then come back? And I can tell my story about my son has a story that he wants me to tell.
Sure. Let's get back
true
and
story. Yep.
All right, guys. Here we go.
Okay, guys. We'll be back. Glitches here with Blog Talk Radio today, but it is Halloween, so bear with us. We're trying to work some of the bugs out. James, we have a little reading
legend
that we'd like to do.
Yeah,
so
well, everybody's heard spooky urban legends, right?
Right.
So this is just another, this is just one of many, and it's entitled The Ride Home.
Oh,
Matthew,
okay.
An average, ordinary guy living on an ordinary life in Texas. Every day he'd wake up, make his coffee, get ready for work, and head out to the office. One night as Matthew was on his way home from work, he had no choice but to take a detour. He hated driving in the rain, let alone in a major storm. He was no stranger to the back roads, but something didn't feel right, and he knew it. About 2 miles from his home, he ventured down Sandusky Road, a half-paved, half-dirt road. The road was dark and vacant, and Matthew had to keep his eyes wide open. She came out of nowhere. Matthew had to slam on his brakes. She stood there, 3 feet in front of his hood of the car. Slowly, she made her way around to the passenger side of the car, and Matthew lowered the window.
"Please, sir, can you take me home? My friends have abandoned me."
Matthew felt awful and assured her that he would take care of her and take her home. She had to have been at least 16, but he didn't ask.
My name is Linda, and I live on Bridal Street. It's not far from here.
Matthew was shocked, as Bridal Street was only two streets from his house. There wasn't much conversation along the way, and before he knew it, they were on Bridal, and she was pointing at her home. He stopped the car, and she left without saying a word. Matthew watched as she quickly made her way up to the house. He began to pull away and noticed that the girl left her handbag on the seat. He put the car in reverse, put it in park, and hurriedly made his way to the house. He rang the doorbell and waited. The porch light came on, and an older woman answered the door.
James.
Did we lose him? Well, the
no,
woman says, okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry to bother you, but I just dropped off a young girl named Linda. She was left out in the rain by her friends, and she forgot her handbag in my car. I hope she's okay. The woman looked at Matthew.
Sir, you must be mistaken. My daughter's name is Linda, but she died in a car accident in 1978.
She slammed the door. Go ahead, James.
I'm sorry. Shut the porch light and left Matthew in the dark. Matthew would never forget that night as long as he lived.
Hey, we got to practice on this one, guys.
Sorry about that glitch. Sorry about that glitch.
That's
sorry.
Okay. That was kind of fun, though. You know, I have a story that I have to tell you guys. I have a couple stories, actually, but this one is really kind of cool. And my son, James, we call him Jimbo, told me about it the other night, and I was kind of in shock because I had never really heard him tell me about visions or visitations that he's had. But this one, apparently he was laying in bed asleep, or so he thought he was asleep, and he was fretting about some things, you know, stressing about some things, and he said that a big, tall, skinny man dressed in 50s clothes, kind of radiating blue, kind of laser-like light around him, visited him, and he said he could feel that this person was just safe, a safe person to be around. And he said that this man told him that he should just stop and sit for a while. He said everything is going to be all right, and don't worry about the future too much because that will destroy you. And he says, here, have a piece of candy. And he put the candy in Jimbo's hand, and James closed his hand on the candy. He could feel the candy in his hand. And then the man disappeared. And so we were talking about it later on, and we thought, you know, that sounded like my grandfather, because my grandfather was over 6 foot tall. He loves candy, and he was always giving us kids, you know, hard candy and kind of treating us. And so, you know, we got to talking and thinking that, you know, this is an ancestor. This is a guardian angel that knows us, that knows James, Jimbo, my son Jimbo, and loves him and wants him to know that everything is going to be all right and to not stress or fret and worry about the future or about tomorrow, and to just stop and sit for a while and know that he is safe. And that was really a cool story. It's a true story, actually, and it's also another way that I think God tells us that he loves us. He sends us these visitors, and they could be relatives. They could be guardian angels. But another story real quick in something that we have been dealing with for a couple of years now when my son was diagnosed with juvenile Huntington's. You know, of course, that's a devastating diagnosis, but, you know, from that point forward, we were kind of searching endlessly for a reason, for answers, for, you know, comfort, for anything that could help us kind of get through this. And my son has been visited by a man whom we call Gerard. And the name came to us through another friend who is somewhat of a psychic person herself, and she found that this person's name was Gerard, and since then we have investigated Saint Gerard, and Saint Gerard is actually a saint of children who are very ill or of pregnant women. So it's a saint who protects children and women. It's kind of an interesting story. But anyway, so Saint Gerard has visited us many times and given James, Jimbo, my Jimbo, a lot of comfort. And so that's kind of an interesting story to share with y'all. One more thing real quick. I wanted to tell you all a very personal thing that happened to me. And, you know, my father had liver cancer, and he was very, very sick for about 2.5 years. And I got a phone call from my mother one day. They were living in Bakersfield. I'm over on the west coast, central coast of California. Bakersfield is over in the San Joaquin Valley, over in the valley of California. And I would be going back and forth to visit mom and dad, and my dad, Papa, was getting pretty sick there. About 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks before he passed, my mother called and said, Melissa, you better get over here because it's not going well. It looks like we're getting toward the end. Hospice had been called in. And so I went and brought my kids with us, and so for the last week, week and a half, I would sit with my dad, hold his hand. He would go kind of in and out of consciousness, coma, somewhat of a coma. And about, I'd say 3 days before he passed, I was holding his hand. He hadn't been conscious for a couple of days, but he woke up. He sat up in bed. He woke up, and I was holding his hand, and he said, Melissa, if you're going to do it, do it. If you're not going to do it, then don't do it. Well, then he went back into a coma, and that was the last thing that he ever said to me. And I have to tell you that those words have, excuse me, I'm going to cry now. Those words have impacted the rest of my life.
Because you definitely did it.
So, you know, these things happen for a reason, and we are all here for a reason, and we all have a job to do, so.
And I might add, you're doing a wonderful job, Melissa.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But anyway, John. Hey, John, are you with us?
Yeah, I know.
We were going to.
I'm sorry?
We were going to talk about the book a little bit more.
Okay, great. I really did enjoy reading just the one chapter in it, and there is so much meaning behind all these things in our lives. I remember the one section where she was talking that she had seen Jesus at the foot of her bed washing her feet, and like you said, they were Jewish, and they ended up, her husband converted to become a Messianic Jewish person after these experiences. But the pain and the suffering that we all go through in our lives, we don't always understand the meaning and what happens behind those things. But I know in my experiences in life, I've seen many things that really convinced me to have the deepest, strongest faith in God and appreciation for these things. And the people out there that are going to make a difference for Huntington's disease, like Francis Collins, have the strongest faith in the Lord, and are very, mm-hmm. very rational, intelligent people. I've experienced stuff with a grandmother who had ESP, or the ability to see beyond what you could normally see, and it's kind of entertaining. I had a friend I brought home once that she never knew, and I didn't know him that well either, and so she answers the door, and she goes, oh, do you fly? And my friend's like, wow, your grandmother's really cool. She's, like, flying on something. But no, he was actually taking flying lessons on the weekends, and I had no clue about that. So your heart tells you sometimes, you know, these kind of things that you don't know through natural experiences. There's a underlying supernatural phenomena going on, and I believe, you know, we are all created with talents and abilities to serve purpose, and I believe that God's involved in all of these things, and that's wholly consistent with my experiences, and I look at the world very scientifically. I came across something called the Journal of Near-Death Experiences when I'm looking at all these different articles on Huntington's disease, and it's fascinating to see these documented stories of, you know, life-after-death experiences with people coming back. And what's interesting is people don't want to talk about the negative ones, but they're out there too. And so I guess when they come back, they kind of have a second chance to make their life have a better purpose. But
it's pretty fascinating stuff, you know.
It's just fascinating.
I think Sue has
Melissa,
a story.
Melissa?
Yeah. Yes.
We actually have Rick online with us. Let me bring him in.
Great.
Rick, you're live with us?
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Hi, Rick. Welcome
Hi.
To the show. How are you tonight?
I'm good.
You have a story for us?
Well, just I'm not a sufferer. I don't have an immediate family member affected by HD, but my fiance's sister has HD, and we think that her daughter has HD also. I was a speaker in Houston back the first of the month on getting the congressman to appropriate the bill.
For advocacy?
Yeah, advocacy, that's it.
Good job.
I'm not sitting in front of the computer right now.
Okay, just talk. You're on live radio, so you're doing good.
And they were very well, they really, really wanted this bill to be taken into effect, and we just had a national call out, and hopefully I've already got the state representative from my area, and I influenced a few people down there in Houston. I'm from Belton.
Good. Oh, you're from Houston?
No, I'm not from Houston.
Oh, okay.
I was down in Houston talking to him.
Oh, okay.
And I influenced enough of them, I think, to get their state representative from their area, plus the two senators, to approve this bill.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we need more people like you out there, definitely working for advocacy.
H.R. 718, and I think it's Senate Bill 682.
Very good. Well, you've been talking to Jane Cogan then.
Yes.
Yes.
A good friend.
We love Jane Cogan.
She asked me to go speak to Houston.
Wonderful. Well, we appreciate all that you're doing, Rick. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for coming on the show.
All right.
Okay,
fine,
have a good day.
Uh-huh.
That was a good call.
Yes.
And Sue, I think Sue has a story for us, a JHD story. Sue?
Indeed, yes. It's from
wonderful.
Texas. Rick, he is a member of my Huntington's Disease Support Club, and he reminded me from Texas.
Okay.
Several years ago, I had a club member whose daughter had juvenile Huntington's disease, and her favourite colour was purple. So they had a special chair made for her, which was purple, and had an embroidered cushion with her name on it.
Aww.
And they said that when she passed away, they would love to give the chair to somebody who needed it, who shared the daughter's name and loved the colour purple. now about a month after. I think it might actually have been on the month anniversary of the young lady's death.
Uh-huh.
Her mother was in a shopping mall, parked next to a vehicle, and the woman in the other vehicle got out and dropped her bag on the floor, so the mother went to help her. Then the woman got her daughter out of the car. She was handicapped, not due to Huntington's disease, cerebral palsy, but her name was the same as the JHD girl who had died,
oh,
and
my
her favourite colour was purple. So the mother just couldn't believe it. And although they had only met 2 minutes ago, she offered that woman her daughter's chair and they accepted. I mean, what are the chances of that happening without some intervention from somewhere?
That's incredible. You know, you hear stories like that a lot. And most people just kind of go, oh, yeah, and they don't think much about it. But, you know, there's something deeper. There's a deeper meaning to all that. And it would be nice to kind of showcase that a little bit more. And I think it would bring more spirituality to people as well, don't you?
Oh, indeed. And
yeah.
I don't think, I mean, all the different religions as well, there is so much in this world that we just don't understand, and what
right.
we decide to attribute it to can be so much influenced by which society we live in, et cetera. So.
My son is listening in the back room, in the back of the room, and he said, we need to bring it up to face value. That's from Jimbo.
Yeah.
We have about 3 minutes left of the show here, and I just wanted to touch on something that I don't know if many of you out there listening have thought about, but something that we've discovered here with my son Jimbo, and that is EMF or electromagnetic fields, cell phones, cordless phones, routers, have a tendency to set off seizures in my son. And after doing a little bit of investigatory work, I happened to find a Research Center for Wireless Technology newsletter. And I also sell the chips for EMF protection that go on your cell phones, if anybody's interested in looking into that. But what this newsletter is talking about, the one that I just got yesterday, Sunday, it says, why are cell phones dangerous? They emit microwaves. You hold the source of the emission against your brain. There are claims that people have had brain tumors in the exact position where the cell phone touches their head. Electromagnetic pollution, EMF, may be the most significant form of pollution human activity has produced in this century. All the more dangerous because it is invisible and insensible. And Andrew Weil, MD, author of Spontaneous Healing and 8 Weeks to Optimum Health, wrote that, quote, but scientists estimate that we are now exposed to 100 million times more EMF radiation every day than in our grandparents' time. Research shows that these fields have a significant disruptive effect on the body's natural energy levels, alter how cells communicate and magnify the fight or flight response. And here's another quote by Stacy from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, real quick. We have about 90 seconds left here. My father died of brain cancer. When they scanned his head to detect the tumor, the doctors were shocked to find that the location of the tumor matched where my father's cell phone would have had contact with his head. As a prominent businessman, my father spent 12 hours or more on a cell phone every day. I used a cell phone but have always been worried about the consequences. I'm grateful for the introduction of the Bipro. Well, this is a different cell chip. But not only do I have one on my cell phone, but I immediately bought one for my husband. Thank you. I only wish your product was available years ago. And this is what happens with overexposure to microwaves, radio waves, and it's all over everywhere now. But listen, with that said, a little bit of sad news on the cell phone issue, but I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Halloween for HD. This is a fun show, and it's going to be fun to re-listen again to it. Again, just want to tell everyone thank you and thank my panel, James, Sue, John. Thank Davia for giving us a wonderful story. And Keith is out there somewhere. I want to thank you all. Reach me at helpforhd@yahoo.com. And please don't hesitate to send me your requests for suggestions of programming. We're off already. That's crazy. That went fast.
Happy Halloween.
We're going to have a little music here. Blog Talk Radio today, but oh. Hey James, everybody, that was some scary music. I'm not sure what that was, but we're back on the show again. John, I think are you there, John?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know what was going on with the Blog Talk Radio, but I couldn't hear anybody, and then James was saying that you couldn't hear me, so I don't know what was happening. James and Sue, can you hear me?
Trick or treat. Let me tell you, yeah, it's definitely a glitch.
Okay, well, I don't know what's going on. But anyway, we're back. And John has some additional information that I'd really like to share with our listeners about the cell phones and EMF and all that kind of stuff. John, take it away.
Okay, sure. I studied electrical engineering because it was the thing to do at the time. And some of the interesting things I learned was that the Soviet Union has 1,000th the amount of exposure to radiation that we allow in this country. To microwave radiation. But what's scary is that the microwave frequencies that are used by cell phones were selected because that spectrum was available, because they were worried about interference from microwave ovens. So it's the same frequency your microwave oven is geared to warm up the water molecules. When you cook with the microwave oven, it ends up producing lots of free radicals. It doesn't just increase the temperature of the food. So our microwave standards are, wow, how much does it increase the temperature of your skin and how many watts per kilogram are being absorbed? So you are cooking yourself slowly with cell phones. So my most important thing you could do is get a Bluetooth headpiece so that the cell phone isn't right up against your head. That'll greatly reduce the amount of radiation that you're exposed to. But it just it's fascinating how the entire industry of communication has evolved around these things that aren't the wisest choices to have been made as to what frequencies should be used. And so there's lots of unhealthy things.
Well, and then we have our utility companies going to smart meters, and our homes are going wireless. I know, you know, for us here with my son Jimbo, in fact, the router is on right now, and I'm thinking, okay, it's getting to be that time to turn the router off because he is so highly sensitive to the EMF that, you know, we're going to have problems if I don't get off the router here soon. So, yeah, I mean, this is scary stuff, and a lot of it we don't have control over, but a lot of it we do. Like, for example, if you give your children wireless technology, instruments, or toys, you are subjecting your child to microwaves. And children's brains,
their eyes are resonant cavities for microwave radiation.
Their skulls are very thin. They're so much more susceptible to microwave. And what did you say, John, about your eyes?
Your eyeballs are actually a resonant cavity to the microwave frequency that comes out of your cell phone, so it concentrates the energy in there. I actually can feel the difference when, I have the wireless router on. One thing you can do is you learn how to turn on and off the wireless part of your router. It's part of your browser. You can just go to the IP address for it, go in as an administrator, and turn it on and off. And I do that all the time. So it's not...
Okay, so how do we do that again? Can you walk us through it?
Oh, it's kind of tough. You have to know the IP address to get into your router. And then you save that basically as, a shortcut link so that you can always go there. And then you go in with your password, and it's usually admin, and then you add your password. And you just go in and you select turn off the wireless part. So if you don't want to switch off your router because it'll shut everything off, then that's what you do. And so when we want to use wireless, we don't do it very often. We just minimize.
One thing I'd like to mention, too, about all this is the information about the EMF, chips that we can put on the phones, and what that does is it contains the EMF in the phone so it's not leaking out into your brain or whatever as much. I'm sure there is still a little bit of residual something coming out of there, but... we're going to put this information on the website, wehaveaface.org, and also on the Help for HD app. And I don't know if all of you out there know about the Help for HD app. Go to your iTunes or Android marketplace and download Help for HD on your iPhones and Androids. And get the EMF chips for your wireless instruments because... it's really going to protect your brain and your loved ones' brains and other parts from the microwaves that come from your cell phones. Another thing, too, is I've been putting them on the router, which has helped as well. But
and Melissa, we'll be able to have the information so people can see it, too, right, and read it?
Right, yes.
Okay.
And we'll have the newsletters and that kind of information right on the app and the website. Does anybody have anything additional that they'd like to add about all that?
I have something kind of funny. I got off the Reader's Digest.
Oh, good. Okay.
It's kind of cute. It says, Halloween was so confusing. All my life, my parents said, never take candy from strangers. And then they dress me up, kick me out, say, go beg for it. I don't know what to do. I knock on people's doors and say, trick or treat. No, thank you.
I love it.
Good old Reader's Digest.
Make up your mind, Mom and Dad.
I'll take a Snickers right now.
Trick or treat. Well, listen, you guys, this was a fun show. Thank you all for coming on this panel.
Wonderful calls, too. Wonderful.
Yes, we had some really good calls. Sorry I lost it there for a little bit. And
we're all human.
Yep, tune back in next Monday. We'll have another great show, and send in your questions, send in your requests for content. We'd love to hear from you, and y'all have a great Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween,
Happy
everyone.
Happy Halloween.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. Thanks again. We had a great show. And have a safe Halloween. Happy Halloween. And we'll be talking to you again next week. Take care, everyone. Good night.